Not every town is lucky enough to have a guy like Porky Oliver Bekar. An inveterate jokester and larger-than-life character, Bekar made his home in Sitka with his wife Patty. His crew, the self-appointed Dirty Dozen, met regularly at a local diner to chat and usually to hatch some plot or other. Porky was one of those guys who didn't just talk about these schemes, he actually followed through. At least that's how Patty Bekar remembers it.
I think Pork was instigator sometimes, but he was the one that usually did it. And the rest would, back him, but he was the one that was usually the fall guy for doing whatever it was. That's why he gets blamed for a lot of things he didn't do.
Their pranks were usually aimed at one another. An indiscreet comment about Porky by Dirty Dozen member Dick Cushing, for example, could not go unanswered. Days later, Cushing, or more properly his wife, returned home to find an enormous 6x12-foot butt log in the middle of his driveway. Or there was the time Porky and his friend Dave Estrom's had made dinner plans for an out-of-town guest. Estrom's recalls that night all too well.
So Porky said, channel where we can get some crab.
Bob Wyman, yet another member of the Dozen, had tanks full of crab at his processing plant. The two decided to go heist a load of crab, but not before Patty forced them to call and ask Wyman's permission, which he readily granted.
We were putting crab into the gunny sacks, and a young watchman or young policeman came by with a flashlight and said, "What are you fellas up to?" And I thought, uh-oh, we're busted now. But Porky didn't miss a beat. He just kept pulling crab and said, "We're stealing crab."
It comes as no surprise that memories of this episode differ somewhat. But by Porky's recollection, the two were hauled down to the police station to answer for their crimes. Jerry Harper reads from Porky's account.
After we got to the station, I suggested they call the owner and verify the fact that we had full permission to take the crab. When they called Wyman and asked if he'd given Porky permission to get crab off the dock, Bob said, "Porky? Porky who?" At this time, I was still a police commissioner, so I had them call the chief of police. After listening to our version of the recent activities, he gave the young arresting officer a brief history of the Dirty Dozen. So, while the young cop was absorbing an advanced lesson in local knowledge, we went to Estrom's to cook the crab and plan in the future forms of retaliation on Bob Wyman.
But Porky's early stunts merely set the stage for what happened on a clear day in April 1974. For years, Porky had been planning his master stroke to stage an eruption of Mount Edgecombe. He had stockpiled more than 100 old tires, along with oily rags, smoke bombs, and a gallon of Sterno. It was just a matter of timing.
April 1st always was a stormy day, and there was no point in doing it. It's 13 miles away, and you need a nice, clear day. March 31st, we were all out to dinner and decided we couldn't do it. They couldn't do it because it was a stormy night. And then that morning, we woke up, and it was bright. Blue sky. And Park says, "We gotta do it."
After some searching around to find a helicopter pilot with a sense of humor, Porky arranged two trips out to the top of the volcano and deposited the tires. He set the whole heap ablaze and the conspirators made a beeline back to Sitka. As Estrom's recalls, the reaction in town came quickly.
I was teaching at the high school at the time. We had a Western exposure classroom, and it was just a crystal clear day. The air was so clear and the sky was so blue and Mount Edgecombe was so white, and then we looked out and here was a black trickle of smoke coming out of it, and we all knew what had happened. Porky finally had succeeded.
Actually, not quite everybody knew what was going on, as Porky later wrote.
Prior to our trip to the mountain, I notified the FAA, and since I was chairman of the police commission, I thought they should be notified too. But I forgot the Coast Guard. While the mountain was spewing out its black smoke, the Coast Guard commander called for a chopper to investigate and sent a whaleboat over to check things out. The chopper pilot radioed back to the commander that all he saw was a bunch of smoldering tires and a big April Fool's sign in the snow. In the meantime, the radio and police station phones were ringing off the hook. I always thought if the smoke had lasted a few more hours, one could have bought some cheap property in Sitka.
And Patty remembers a few ordinary townspeople must not have checked their calendars that morning.
One woman who was teaching at Mount Edgecombe School, we were told, she was running down the street hailing cars and saying, we've got to get off this island because Mount Edgecombe is erupting. Yeah, people were a little excited in town.
The prank went out on the news wires and quickly became known internationally. It's never easy to tell exactly at what moment a true story crosses into the realm of tall tale, but it didn't take long in this case. Patty remembers a passage in a book by mystery writer J.A. Jantz.
She has the story happening. She has two fishermen landing on the island and carrying tires up. I emailed her and said, you know, two people couldn't carry tires up there. It's 13 miles. It's a long hike. It's an impossible hike. But carrying tires and carrying, there were 100 tires carried up for that incident, you know.
Some of Porky's friends remember him for much more than his pranks. Estrams, a musician, wrote a song about one of Porky's other deeds.
Porky, he leaned back and he just said, oh, well.
Oh, yeah, that's Old Blue. Porky probably did more favors for more people that no one knew about. He was more friend to more people than anyone I think I've ever known. So at that time of that song, we just had a clunker of a car that, as the song says, it barely ran. And finally Porky said, why don't you use my pickup truck, which he called Old Blue.
And I said, Porky Oliver Bacar, I'm calling you, 'cause I think that I just killed Old Blue. I'm hoping and I'm praying that it ain't too bad, but I don't know what to do. So Porky Oliver Bacar, I'm calling you.
Porky Oliver Bacar died on August 11th last year. Even toward the very end, Patty says, he bragged to the people who would visit him at the hospital that his prank had made lists circulating on the internet of the greatest April Fool's tricks of all time. By the time Porky died, the Dirty Dozen had dwindled to just a handful.
Time has taken its toll on the Dirty Dozen, but these men were part of some of the best and richest times in my life. No one was ever hurt morally or financially by the pranks we pulled. And in the same light, when the chips were really down, we always and immediately provided the kind of support that couldn't be found anywhere else. Believe me, friendships were forged and tested, and I dearly miss all those who are gone.
'Cause I think that I just killed Old Blue.
For AK, I'm Gabriel Spitzer.
Too bad, but I don't know what to do. So Porky Oliver Bacar, I'm calling you.